Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Dear Marketplace listener, the email information you've shared with all kinds of businesses may have just been stolen. So to make sure no sensitive information has been compromised, send your Social Security and credit card numbers right away. No, you say? That's the right answer, because now's a really good time to be skeptical about your email. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Pro Online Backup, the automatic backup solution designed for small businesses. Learn more at carbonitepro.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon in for Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for joining us this Monday, the 4th of April. Do you do business with any of these companies? Capital One, Citibank, Marriott, the Home Shopping Network, Walgreens, or TiVo? Check your inbox today, and there's likely to be an apology along with a warning that your email address may have been compromised. A big marketing firm that works with those brands and many more has had its data breached. Cyber thieves stole possibly millions of email addresses. Now, we're not talking about bank account information or credit card numbers, but Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith explains why this is still such a big deal.
Usually, email addresses aren't worth the time it takes to steal them.
Email addresses are very cheap. I think the last time I checked, you could buy a million of them for about $20.
That's online security expert Brian Krebs. But he says these email addresses are special because they're linked to companies. So cyber thieves know that a certain email address is a customer of Best Buy or JPMorgan Chase. That makes it possible to launch a more sophisticated type of scam, where cyber thieves imitate a trusted site, like your bank, and get you to give up information.
Email comes in, and it's not just dear ex-bank user. It's an email that addresses you by name. It includes in the body of the message some particular detail about you or your relationship with the company that the fraudsters are impersonating.
Ted Julian is an analyst at the Yankee Group. He found out about the data breach when he got an email from TiVo. I asked him who would want his email address.
People whose business is to send you all the spam that clogs up your inbox. Organized crime is always looking for this kind of information so that they can run various scams.
Julian says cyber theft is now a multi-billion dollar business. It's also very bad for business, says Georgia Tech's Nick Feimster. He says the breach could raise doubts about any online marketing campaign.
Companies spend tens of billions of dollars trying to protect against this type of incident.
This is one of the biggest data breaches on record. Epsilon released a statement saying that just 2% of its clients have been affected and that it's fully investigating what happened. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
The mounting troubles facing Southwest Airlines today are all the more painful for a carrier that prides itself in offering cheap fares which depend on a highly efficient flight schedule.
You are now free to move about the country.
Today, Southwest was forced to cancel around 70 more flights on top of the 600 it scrubbed over the weekend. Maintenance crews are checking planes for hairline cracks like the ones that opened up into a yard-long hole in one of Southwest's Boeing 737s on Friday. The Federal Aviation Administration is expected to order checks of other 737s across the industry after Boeing recommended it. The Southwest plane landed safely. Nobody was hurt. But now it seems the stress Southwest puts on its older planes could cause some pain for the company and the way it operates. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
The Southwest plane in question was about 15 years old, back when the company started buying its kind.
It was the creme de la creme.
Howard Putnam was Southwest CEO in 1981. He says the company needed a workhorse and found it in the 737-300 series.
Our airplanes did more takeoffs and landings. That's how you make money.
But taking off and landing seven times a day for 15 years is tough, even for the 300 series.
As an airplane pressurizes, it expands. And then as you depressurize, why, it comes back. So it's no different than if you had a piece of aluminum in your hand and you just kept bending it and bending it and bending it.
Eventually, something's got to give. And now consultant Robert Ditchie says that something maybe Southwest's plan to add longer flights to destinations like New York and D.C.
The likely scenario is Southwest will not expand or might go through a slight contraction as it retires these older airplanes.
Transportation professor Richard Gritta says in the long run, this means more of the older planes will be grounded more often.
Now, there's ways to handle that. You could buy more aircraft and simply, you know, rotate just like you do with the second team in basketball or football.
A second string plus pricier oil means higher fares for the rest of us. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Amid hopeful signs we might be emerging from the long jobless recovery, there's word somebody's hiring: McDonald's. The chain says it'll hire up to 50,000 people later this month, all of them in a single day, April 19th. The company says it's growing and that more stores are staying open 24 hours. As Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports, the hiring spree is also about something else: ordering up a new image.
Sharon Lipscomb is always in the market for new employees. Lipscomb owns 12 McDonald's franchises around Las Vegas. And lately, because of the economy, she's been hiring a lot of college students.
What they told me was they never really considered us before. They didn't understand the opportunity. They didn't understand how much they would learn.
She's hoping the hiring day will help convince people who are looking for careers that working at McDonald's is more than just a McJob. The company itself has been trying to get that message across for years. Mark Kalinowski follows McDonald's at Janney Capital Markets. He says Mickey D's is going to hire all these people anyway, but doing it all at once gets a lot of attention and makes the company look good.
They are an employer that is hiring and not the greatest economy in the world, so that's a plus for the economy in general. That's a plus for the individuals that get hired.
All of that is a plus for McDonald's, since the fast food chain is often held up as an example of what's wrong with America right now: high-calorie foods and low-wage jobs. Instead, McDonald's would rather be seen in a category with companies like Starbucks, which are seen as offering real career ladders.
McDonald's has put hard work into making sure that its employees realize that they're valued.
Not every hamburger flipper is going to end up a CEO, but Kalinowski says at some point most of McDonald's top management has had a chance to ask, "Would you like fries with that?" I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Wall Street couldn't seem to figure out which way was up today. Details when we do the numbers. Close to $1 billion in earthquake relief aid has been collected by Japan's Red Cross and other nonprofits. Some of that money has been spent, but no cash grants have yet been distributed directly to victims. The country's chief cabinet secretary wants the process accelerated. The Japanese Red Cross told the LA Times cash grants should start flowing this month. Joining us with more is Sandra Schimmelfennig. She writes the blog Good Intentions Are Not Enough and was a relief worker in Asia. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Are you surprised that none of the money collected by the Red Cross has been given out in Japan yet?
I think it's not surprising. I think that the average person has misconceptions about how quickly you can truly respond well to a disaster. And there have been numerous instances where spending the money quickly is not spending it well, where a lot of aid, a lot of services go to a few people. It can be diverted to political causes or to cronies. There's been lots and lots of examples of past disasters that have shown that there really needs to be a coordinated, thought-out response with the local people having some decision-making in it.
Well, what about this idea of handing out cash to disaster victims? Is that the way it's traditionally done?
No, actually, cash transfers are pretty new. For a very long time, it was donations of goods. For instance, massive food shipments would be handed out. Clothing would be handed out. Toiletries would be handed out. But they've discovered that cash transfers actually work a lot better because you may need something very different. Older people who eat a lot less food and sometimes have to have a specialized diet can purchase their specialized diet and whatever money's left over, use that to pay for their medications, which the younger people might not need. And so there's a lot of kinks to be worked out, and a lot of countries have never tried it before, which means the first time you do it, it's a little bit slower. You don't have your processes in place yet.
There was some experience with this most recently with the big typhoon in Vietnam last year. How did that go?
Overall, it went pretty well. People got the money. People were able to use the money for whatever they felt like they needed it for. Some farmers used it to get farm equipment. Some elderly people used it to purchase medicine. It was overall rated very well. And from start to finish, it just took 6 weeks. And the expectation is next time around, it'll just take 4 weeks.
What are the complications in getting these cash outlays to Japan?
Some of the complications include, how are you going to transfer the money? And this can get complicated because, first of all, you've got to have some form of a cash transfer system. Is this going to be via phone? And if it's done via phone, you've got to have the bank or the phone system set up where people can actually go take their phone and collect the money. One of the other issues is, who gets how much money? Does every single person get the exact same amount of money? Do you give more money to families that are larger? Do you give more money to companies that have had their businesses destroyed? Do you give more money to people that were farmers? All of these decisions have to be made, and they are generally made better with consultation of the local government and the local people. But even then, once you've got that agreement down, you've still got to find everyone. Some people are in the larger temporary camps. Some people have moved back into their houses, even though they don't have water and electricity. So you've got to then track down everyone, know how much they're going to get and how you're going to get it to them. So it's a complicated process. It's not like you can just show up in a truck and start handing out money. And in fact, when that's been tried, I saw that tried in Thailand, what would happen is if you weren't there when the money came, you might not get the money. And so it's not as simple as showing up with cash and handing it out. You do need to make sure you have an equitable distribution system and one that gets to everyone, that you're not missing people in the system.
Sandra Schimmelfennig is a former American Red Cross program coordinator and Peace Corps volunteer. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
This land is your land, this land is my land, but the government can decide how it gets used. More and more communities are looking to the future and getting a little nostalgic about the way things used to be. They have visions of nice shops and busy sidewalks, maybe apartments on the upper floors and homes a short walk away. There's just one problem: zoning laws. Dan Bobkoff of the public media project Changing Gears tells us why.
Before big box stores and strip malls and a car in every driveway, it was normal to live in dense neighborhoods.
A place where they can walk to a corner store, maybe live above a store, and those kinds of things, that's illegal in America today in so many of our communities.
Illegal because of zoning. Anthony Flint is with the Lincoln Institute of Land Policy. He says cities have spent much of the last century separating the shops and factories and homes, and that made sense in the beginning.
You didn't want to have a slaughterhouse next to a residential apartment.
But the effect was an almost complete segregation of uses. Jeff Pritchard pulls up a colorful zoning map on his laptop. He's in charge of planning for the Cleveland exurb of Streetsboro.
Website, you'll see that we have a downtown business core.
On the map, industry is colored purple, homes are yellow, and the commercial district in the middle is pink. But there's no overlap. No yellowy-pink spot with housing and shops in the same place. And when Pritchard took me for a drive, I could see what happened.
This is the town square?
This is the town square. Yes, sir.
Let's be honest. There's no town square. It's just an intersection amid big box stores.
I think you have every chain I've ever seen. You have a Lowe's and a Home Depot, a Walmart and a Target.
This is one of those communities that's exploded with growth since the 1960s, thanks to easy highway access. But Pritchard believes the public is starting to turn away from cities like this. He thinks high gas prices and changing tastes and demographics mean Streetsboro will have to look more like those towns of yesteryear. And his weapon will be a new kind of zoning that's spreading around the country. Places like Peoria, Illinois, Denver, and Miami.
A city where they can actually get up in the morning, be able to walk out, be able to have activities happening on the street.
Anna Helibert Sanchez spent the last decade as Miami's city planner, pushing for that dream. She convinced city officials to try something of a revolution in zoning, called form-based code. It's all about the look and feel of a neighborhood. So the city no longer dictates that residential goes in one spot and shops in another. Instead, form-based code might say a building should be 3 stories high and its doors must open to the sidewalk, but it can be used for anything, apartments, shops, or both.
People wanted to be able to, you know, to have the mom-and-pop stores at the ground level.
I almost radically disagree with this notion, you know, that everybody had this lifestyle, that everybody wants this lifestyle, that everybody needs this lifestyle.
Lolita Buckner Innes teaches at the Cleveland Marshall College of Law. She says dense living wasn't so great back in the day. Why else did so many poor city dwellers long to move up and out to single-family homes in the suburbs? And she's seen many fads in urban planning hurt poor and minority residents. But few cities are going fully to form-based code. Most are using it to transform certain neighborhoods. In Streetsboro's huge Walmart parking lot, though, Sean Smitek and Becky Slattery had a hard time believing.
Could you imagine this strip having sidewalks and people walking?
No, not at all.
It's too busy.
Yeah, it's definitely too busy.
But they say they have no love for the way it looks now. In Streetsboro, Ohio, I'm Dan Bobkoff for Marketplace.
Coming up, companies find an upside in their switch to clean energy.
Our power bill every month is less by, you know, factor 4.
Saving the world and a few dollars. But first, let's do the numbers. Somebody forgot to tell Wall Street the weekend was over. In the slowest trading day this year, the Dow Jones Industrial Average tipped up just under 0.2% or 23 points to end at 12,400. The Nasdaq finished flat, 2789. The S&P 500 also stood still, closing at 1332. As we told you earlier, Southwest canceled hundreds more flights. That brought down its shares by more than 1.5%. The other airlines weren't exactly flying high either. AMR, parent of American Airlines, descended 1.9%. United Continental stock was 0.75% lower. Delta lifted 0.1%. Katie Couric said she would leave the CBS Evening News after fewer than 5 years in the anchor chair. Maybe it's the end of that multi-million-dollar star deal. Viacom, CBS's parent company, reported a gain of more than 0.8%. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 3.42%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Pro Online Backup, the automatic backup solution designed for small businesses. Carbonite Pro automatically backs up computer files to a secure location with anytime, anywhere access from any computer or smartphone. Learn more at CarboniteProducts.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. A Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation subcommittee discusses tourism in America, removing barriers and promoting growth. President Obama hosts Israeli President Peres for a working lunch at the White House. And she brought to life the fabulous character Margot Channing in All About Eve, among many others. During her 6-decade career, actress Betty Davis was born on April 5, 1908. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. I'm Bob Moon in for Kai Ristall. You may have experienced this. You have a lot of checks and payments going in and coming out of your bank account, paychecks going in, mortgage and car payments going out, and wires get crossed. Before you know it, some little check to the dry cleaner bounces. Citibank said today that come July 25th, it'll clear all those little checks before the big ones. The aim is to reduce the number of bounced checks. But Mike Mebs, an economist with bank consultancy Mebs Services, says there's a potential downside. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, Bob.
So explain, if you will, what Citibank is doing exactly and how that differs from the way banks have processed checks in the past.
Well, in the past, Bob, they have processed checks of your largest items, such as rent, mortgage payment, auto payments first, and then smaller items, such as for cash or very small items at a convenience store, gas station, grocery store, they have processed last. The difference here is this. You will pay less fees because there will be fewer items that you will be charged for. However, you will also have a lower FICO score.
The credit score is going to go lower because of what?
Since the bigger ones will probably be rejected, and the bigger ones are mortgage and auto payments, they will be recorded that you were late on your payment. and or they could be reported, which is even more adverse, that you didn't have any money in your account and your check bounced.
So be careful what you wish for here. If they just clear those smaller checks, then I wouldn't bounce so many, but boy, you've got a flip side.
Absolutely you do. Those small independent outfits that the consumer may go to, like a small grocery store, they usually have greater leverage with their banks than the consumer has. If the consumer would say to them, gee, I made a mistake, to Dave Drugs, Dave would say, oh, forget about it, I'll handle it with the bank. You say that to somebody who has got your auto loan, they don't care. They're just going to record the fact that you didn't make your payment on time. Those will cost you somewhere in the range of 30 to 70 FICO score or credit score points.
But if, as you say, consumers are going to be unhappy about this, why would you have the banks do this?
Primarily because many consumer advocates, lacking the information on researching this, have influenced Congress, and some congressional representatives and senators have felt that, you know, this is the way to go. But they don't realize that if that mortgage payment bounces or auto payment bounces, that's going to be recorded. And in this day and age, with everything that's going on in the credit card business and with lending in total also, that's very significant.
Be interesting to see how this is received. Banking consultant Mike Mebs, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
The growing pain of rising energy prices around the world has got some companies re-examining the way they do business. Just maybe making their own power would be more cost-effective. Some big names in business are weaning themselves off public utilities and using new technology to generate electricity on site. There's even a green lining. Turns out it's cleaner than the old sources. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Troll reports.
To kick off last July 4th weekend, T.J. Rogers held a celebration at his Silicon Valley company, Cypress Semiconductors.
I felt like a teenage girl. I actually rummaged through my closets and found three different red, white, and blue outfits, and I picked this one.
He wanted to look good for cameras when he made his declaration of energy independence.
It sometimes becomes necessary for a company to rethink the bonds that have connected it to other organizations.
Rogers wants to sever his company's bond to the electrical grid. He started by spending $1.5 million to plaster the company's rooftops with solar panels. They generate about $70,000 a year in energy.
And our power bill every month is less by, you know, factor four.
A lot of companies that have invested in solar, wind, or other cleaner forms of power have done so for public relations, says energy analyst Sam Jaffe.
They're much more willing to invest in low-carbon, renewable technologies that have a larger social goal.
But he says in the past year, what started as a way to save the planet is becoming a way to, well, save money. A big part of that is banks. As public utility prices go up and technologies like solar panels get cheaper, banks are more willing to make loans for clean energy projects.
Innovation in financing and new financing models can have as much of an impact as any technological breakthrough. It becomes very attractive to business investors.
Plus, companies no longer have to commit to buying the equipment. Instead, they sign something called a power purchase agreement with the company that makes the panels, turbines, or other technology.
Where we don't have to own or operate the systems, but really can purchase the energy that is produced from them.
That's Kim Sailors-Laster. She's vice president of energy for Walmart.
Renewable projects that we do don't necessarily have to save money, but they need to be on par with traditional power sources.
Walmart started several pilot programs. It put wind turbines in parking lots, skylights and solar panels on rooftops. And a 200,000-square-foot Walmart in Lancaster, California, gets power from fuel cells that convert heat and natural gas into electricity. It's not completely clean energy, but it is much cleaner. The cells are made by a company called Bloom Energy. They hum so quietly out back, a manager had to help me find them. He pointed to some gray metal blocks.
There are four units, and they're as big as a Ford 150.
You would never know what they were. They don't even look interesting.
No, they look like a part of a Walmart building. You would never know that they're an actual power source.
The Walmart staff couldn't tell me how the fuel cells save energy, but they don't have to, because Bloom Energy hooked up the boxes and maintains them. Bloom also has contracts with eBay, Staples, and Coca-Cola. Bloom CEO K.R. Sridhar used to sell the boxes for $700,000 each. He says the option to just buy the power instead of the box is now the selling point for companies.
It's economic security, predictability of price. And by the way, it happens to be a green product that's sustainable.
By locking in a price for power, Walmart VP for Energy Kim Sailors-Laster says renewable energy projects can now do much more than break even.
As the price of traditional power increases, our prices generally stay flat.
And because of that, it's economic reasons rather than social ones driving companies toward greener energy. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note, we all know everything happens lightning speed in the online world. Too fast, apparently, for a federal appeals court in Washington. The court threw out challenges to controversial new rules adopted in December on the way companies can throttle internet traffic. The D.C. Appeals Court says lawsuits filed against the Federal Communications Commission by Verizon Communications and Metro PCS are premature. The companies were told they at least have to wait until the new rules are published. And that's Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. Today, the Dow bumped up just under 0.2% or 23 points. The NASDAQ finished flat. The S&P 500 also finished right where it started. Our producers include Abishai Artsy, Millie Jefferson, Megan Larson, and Fiona Eng. Tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. Next time on this program, on a scale of 1 to 10, Britain puts some hard numbers on happiness.
I'm a fairly sanguine and optimistic person, so I would say 8.
Going door to door to gauge well-being, the latest in our series Economy 4.0. I'm Bob Moon. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow. This is APM, American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.